From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Wildcast podcast. I'm Justin Spears, here with my co-host Dominic Pachaco. We're back in studio talking all things Arizona basketball. Before we get into it, just a reminder, make sure you download the Wildcaster app, which is available on the App Store and Google Play. It's free. You don't need a subscription to the Arizona Daily Star. Podcast, videos, photo galleries, stories. Great coverage of your Arizona Wildcats on the Wildcaster app.
Exclusive.
A very special podcast because we're going to talk some Arizona women's basketball here in just a little bit. We have PJ Brown, Arizona Daily Star beat writer for the women's basketball team, doing a great job so far as the Wildcats punch their ticket to the WNIT Elite Eight. So we'll hear from PJ in just a little bit. But Dom, some other news coming out of Arizona basketball on the men's side. Nico Mannion, Josh Green, a couple of future Arizona Wildcats. They played in the McDonald's All-American game. Dom, you had a chance to really watch them play. What did you like about Nico Mannion and Josh Green on the court together?
I like how they're already so in sync. It's like they've been playing together for an entire season already. And it's these high school showcase all-star type events are really difficult to kind of gauge a player where he is in his development, how ready he is. I mean, they're all flashy. They're all trying to put on a show. Nobody's going to go off because minutes are split pretty evenly among 12 guys on the team. They all get 15 to 20 minutes or so. I think Mannion and Green both played right in that range, 15, 16 minutes. Yeah. Both finished with 8 apiece. Didn't shoot the ball particularly well, but there was one play, Justin, where Nico Mannion was on the far side of the three-point line, not in the corner, but out near the top of the three-point line, and Josh Green was down on the baseline in the corner on the opposite side, and he starts cutting to the basket, and Nico Mannion over a defender jumps over, gets him the ball. I mean, across the court, pretty much finds Josh Green underneath. Josh Green takes two dribbles, goes up, reverse layup, and it was just the way it happened. It was a nice play, but they were just so in sync. And Nico Mannion, after the game, the Star's very own Bruce Pasco was fortunate enough to head out to Atlanta for the week's festivities. Nico Mannion, after the game, told Bruce, quote, "I know where he was going to be. I jumped before I even threw the ball. His guy jumped, being the defender on Josh Green, and I knew that Josh Green was going to go back door. Me and him just have a feel for each other. Everything we do is together." Said Josh Green after the game, "It's just a connection, I guess, me and Nico." So, you know, so
it's established.
These are two guys who haven't played at Arizona yet. And they've, you know, Mannion had a large hand in bringing Josh Green here. Green said that wasn't the only reason. Sean Miller obviously played a large part in that. And these two guards' relationship with Miller speaks volumes because they're already connected. You know, yeah. I mean, Josh Green talked about it, that this is what they want to bring to Arizona next year. And it looks good already.
When did they start getting going in the McDonald's All-American game? Because I was doing radio over at ESPN Tucson, yeah, and I had the game on in the background on my laptop, and I watched like the first quarter, and I saw Nico Mannion put up a terrible three-pointer. I think Josh Green also had another miss, and I was like, man, it's kind of a rough start for the Arizona Wildcats. But then they started to pick it up because they were playing together as a unit, mm-hmm, and I think that's something really cool about the McDonald's All-American game is because it's not just Arizona guys getting together. You know, some of the other blue bloods around the country, teams like Duke or even Kentucky, they have a couple guys in the game, so they're able to play together. So you can see the next generation of hoopers for college basketball already start to take shape. And with Josh Green and Nico Mannion, I mean, they're going to be one of the more dynamic duos, not only in the Pac-12, but in the country. Now, I say in the country, I'm not going to say that they're going to take Arizona to being a top five team. I'm not, mm-hmm, saying that at all. Mm-hmm. But individually, those two guys are really going to shine. I love their games. I love what each one of those guys bring to the table for Arizona.
It's interesting because we sit here and talk about how good their game is, but I think even more important, something that Arizona has missed, and I always go back to this. Remember when The whole team lived in the same house. Was that the? It was the Gabe York, Nick Johnson, Caleb Tarzewski year. I think the last time they did it, Aaron Gordon maybe was on that team.
It was like a 10-bedroom house.
Yeah, they all lived in the same house. It was that kind of continuity. The team got along. They liked each other. They were friends playing basketball, and they made back-to-back Elite Eights. And you haven't really seen that. I'm not saying that there was disconnect within the locker room this year, that the players weren't on the same page, but it's not the same feel. I don't know what it is, but you haven't really, it hasn't been something that you talked about. I mean, when's the last time that we talked about, you know, this team's really close. They're playing with it. Sean Miller always uses the word togetherness. You haven't really seen that out of Arizona teams. So to see Nico Mannion, who's going to be throwing Josh Green dimes all season next year, already have that connection with the guy that he's close with and that he's friends with, two of your top recruits coming in a few months. It's got to be an encouraging sign for Sean Miller. Another guy who was at this game, who played in the McDonald's All-American game, I mean, was Jeremiah Robinson Earl. You remember him, Justin?
Used to consider.
Considered Arizona before committing to Villanova, who won a national championship a little bit prior. He had good things to say about Arizona afterwards that I think were noteworthy, in that he said, I was impressed with them. You know, they're great coaching staff. And he said nothing but good things about Arizona, which is good to see. Bruce Pascoe talked about it a little bit in one of his blogs last week, how even players, when they go commit to a program like Villanova, have nothing but good things to say about Arizona. And of course, you know, you could say, sure, what is he going to say? He's not going to come out and bash Arizona.
Sure.
He's not going to say, if he didn't have a good time, he wouldn't say that. But for him to talk about a program that he didn't choose, one that had a very good recruiting class that he would have fit in well with, I think it speaks volume about Arizona's program, what the student athletes still think about them with this cloud hanging over them. You know, it's an attractive program, and we heard it all year in the form of coaches saying, you know, they're still the pinnacle of the Pac-12, and that goes for off the court as well in recruiting. And I think the McDonald's All-American game is a pretty good showcase for that.
I'm excited for Nico Mannion, and big ups to Bleacher Report for doing this kind of video profile on Nico Mannion, where they're interviewing a bunch of different guys. The Red Mamba. You behind on the nickname, Dom?
I don't know. He's got
flaming red hair.
It's not that original. It's not that original.
Yeah. I like G-Year's high school nickname.
Remind me what it was.
The Jinja Ninja.
I like that. I like that a lot. How many Jinja Ninjas do you know? I already know a Mamba, a pretty famous one. So give me Jinja Ninja. I like it.
Isn't Brian Scalabrini or Matt Bonner one of those two guys? Isn't one of those two guys already the Red Mamba?
Okay. I see where you're going with this. I'm pretty sure it's Scalabrini.
Shout out to Scalabrini. Because he wore 24, too.
Right.
I think so. He was a Red Mamba. Mm-hmm. I like Jinja Ninja better.
It's original.
But, you know, outside of the recruiting class and the McDonald's All-American game, it's an exciting time for Arizona because you're seeing the future. I mean, after a season like this past season, Arizona fans are focused on getting to 2019, 2020. But in order to get to that point, Dom, you got to get through the month of April. And while that is a whole story in itself, something kind of related but not exactly related to everything that's going on.
Under the similar umbrella, I don't even know if you can call it the same umbrella. It's like if you're walking in the rain next to someone and they're holding an umbrella, it's under that one.
Okay.
That's the umbrella it's under. Yeah.
Michael Avenatti.
That's how this starts.
So let me tell you, we're doing a U of A basketball podcast, and we're including Stormy Daniels' former lawyer. This is how crazy the world is nowadays, Dom. Michael Avenatti was arrested for allegedly extorting $25 million from Nike. And the day after he was released from jail after posting a $300,000 bond, he then goes to Twitter early in the morning, really early in the morning. And by early in the morning, I mean 6 a.m. here in Tucson. He's in New York, so it's 9 a.m. there. That's a decent time of the day for him. He starts tweeting about Nike paying players to go to specific schools, and specifically, not players, but players as families. One of them being DeAndre Ayton, former Arizona Wildcat. Michael Avenatti accused Nike on Twitter of paying DeAndre Ayton's mom money to do whatever. This is interesting. What do you make of all this? Because this has no direct ties to Sean Miller or the Arizona Wildcats program. Although Michael Avenatti did say Nike wanted him to go to Arizona. So they gave his mom X amounts of money. We don't know the amount of money. We do know TJ Gasnola, the Adidas consultant, said in the October trial that he or Adidas gave DeAndre Ayton's handler or well-known friend $15,000, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
To attend an Adidas school. Seems like the battle of the brands for DeAndre Ayton's play. What do you make of all this, Dom?
Focusing on Michael Avenatti's tweets, he did tweet the day after he accused, said I think the tweet was asked DeAndre Ayton's mother about the Nike payments. And there was no more information than that. We didn't know how much. We didn't know his timeline. We knew literally nothing about it. And again, take everything this guy says with a grain of salt, because, you know, he's also in a federal trial for extorting Nike for $25 million. So this guy's going to say everything and anything he can right now within reason. The day after he accused DeAndre Ayton and his mother of taking payments from Nike, he tweeted something that he called receipts showing two payments of $5,000 totaling $10,000, bank statements of cash funneled. We don't know who received it. He's claiming that it was taken out by then Nike rep Carlton DeBose and then given to DeAndre Ayton's mother. So he tweeted bank statements. He tweeted a conversation between Carlton DeBose and DeAndre Ayton's mother, and then tweeted bank statements separately. There's not a whole lot to make of this. Again, this is why I say it's under a different umbrella, is because we got to get through April 1st.
Yep.
You know, Carlton DeBose has been linked to Bol Bol and DeAndre Ayton. It's not really new. It's just allegations resurfacing. The bank statements are kind of interesting. We don't know where they went. Again, I mean, they're just bank statements showing $5,000 withdrawals. So it doesn't prove much. But again, he's tweeting that. This is, you know, it's in the prosecutor's hands now, is what he said. It's in the prosecutor's hands, but if you think that's the first time that those bank payments surfaced, you know, I don't know. There's so many question marks, and you can't take anything Avenatti says at face value. So again, we got to get through April. Justin, you said at the beginning, that's the next step in all of this is the April federal trial in college basketball. And 3 weeks away now, a little bit, we're under 3 weeks away now, April 22nd.
It's crazy. April 22nd, so
I'll confirm that.
Three weeks away.
April 22nd.
That's so crazy that it's actually here. Mm-hmm. By the end of this weekend, when Monday comes, it's April 1st. So once April hits, like, we're closing in on that federal trial, which, by the way, hasn't stopped Sean Miller from recruiting. You sent me that photo of Sean Miller and Danny Peters out on the road recruiting, and they are currently in, or not, I say currently as in like right now, but they were in Nevada checking out Coronado High School, which has a 5-star combo guard who goes by the name of Jaden Hardy. So he's a 5-star combo guard.
2021.
So he's going
2 years down the road.
So he's just a sophomore right now. He's going to be a junior. They're out on the road recruiting. So they're not letting any of this hoopla surrounding the program, you know, get in the way of the task at hand. And that's getting guys for next season or for the following seasons. But man, Sean Miller looks beat. He looks tired. He looks exhausted. And after the last 2 years that he's dealt with, I would be too.
I think there was a picture of him last year, a similar one, where he was up in the stands watching a high school basketball game, and he just looked completely depleted. Again, amid all of these rumors that is he done? Is he going, you know, all these accusations over him, and it was the end of the season. The cloud is kind of firmly over Sean Miller right now, and you can tell in his face. I mean, at the very least, he just finished a very long season, not as long as he would have liked, of course, but,
sure.
You know, it's a hard grind. They've been playing in practice since this last summer, and now, he had, I don't know how much time he took off after their last loss in the Pac-12 tournament, but it probably wasn't much because he got back out on the road recruiting and he's hard at work now. So he's just, I mean, cloud or no cloud, he's pooped. And I mean, you can tell there's that. I swear, it's a photo every year of Sean Miller recruiting off on the road, and he's just absolutely pooped. I couldn't tell today if it was like just a bad timing, like if he started smiling like a second after that photo, if it was like, hey, guys, smile, I'm taking a photo, and like Miller beforehand was just not smiling. But yeah, the photo's pretty funny. Try to check it out if you can. Justin, I know I sent it to you. Yeah. Do you know who tweeted it?
Coronado, the high school basketball page.
Okay. Yeah, so go check out their Twitter.
The look on Sean Miller's face is the look I get when Raising Cane's gives me coleslaw. Mm-hmm. Instead of extra fries. That's what David Skinner responded earlier. Shout out to him for that.
It's awesome. Accurate.
But man, Michael Avenatti, mm-hmm. Arizona basketball. What a weird time, Dom.
By the way,
it's all he said, she said. You know, like you said, Dom, take his tweets with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. We don't know what's going to happen moving forward, but it's still noteworthy to kind of keep your eye on.
By the way, I just opened up Michael Avenatti on Twitter because he had a funny bio that I was trying to remember. Obviously, he went through the Stormy Daniels Trump case, and his bio, this isn't my main point, but this is what brought me to this page, so I'll lead with this. According to Trump, my real name is Aviante. Who knew? I'm imagining when Trump called Tim Apple.
Tim Apple, the guy Tim from Apple.
Yeah,
I think
Tim
it's
Apple.
Like Tim Cook.
It is. It's Tim Cook. He called him Tim Apple at the White House. But no, so that's what brought me here. But my point here, Avenatti's Twitter account, his tweets are not protected. He locked his Twitter account. So that's interesting. That's a new development. I will read you his tweets, original ones, if you're trying to find them and have not seen them yet. His original one about DeAndre Ayton, first of all, he was talking about Nike not cooperating with investigators, which they claim to have been doing. And then he got to DeAndre Ayton saying, quote, "Ask DeAndre Ayton and Nike about the cash payments to his mother and others. Nike's attempt at diversion and cover-up will fail miserably once prosecutors realize they have been played by Nike and their lawyers. This reaches the highest levels of Nike." He also threw Bol Bol into another tweet. So, you know, again, realize that it's Michael Avenatti who, a day before tweeting this, was charged with trying to extort Nike of $25 million. So this is another reason, before we get into it with PJ here, they want women's basketball to be playing for as deep as they can to the WNIT because it's the hottest thing on campus right now. And after this, it's the federal trial. Mm-hmm. So without further ado,
all right, Dom, now I want to switch gears for a little bit. We're going to end the podcast with a very special guest joining us in studio, PJ Brown, Arizona Daily Star correspondent who covers the Arizona women's basketball team. The Wildcats punched their ticket to the Elite Eight of the WNIT after beating Idaho 68-60 at McHale Center. PJ, you were at McHale Center.
Yes.
How's it going?
Front and center.
How's it going, by the way?
It's going really well.
So you're getting postseason action right now. Does it feel weird, kind of?
It does. It's the first time. I've been covering Adia Barnes and her program now for 3 years since she started coaching as the head coach here. And this is the first time that she's been to postseason, so it's my first time here covering it.
What did you think about the game last night? Arizona, although it wasn't an 8-point game, it was a very close game. It was a chippy one. It was a brawl almost, because Ari McDonald got into a collision. She got a busted lip. She even still spoke at the post game press conference, which I thought was pretty cool, looking like she got into a boxing match. But overall thoughts on the game?
I thought Arizona proved that they definitely belong here in the WNIT, and you know, it got close in the third quarter. Idaho brought it, closed the gap to 2 points at one time, but it seemed in the building like Arizona was still winning by a large margin. Like they were just going to take it. And it didn't matter how close. Didn't matter if they had even tied it up. Arizona was going to win that game. Mm-hmm. There was something about the demeanor of the team and how much they wanted it that you were just waiting for that one moment that flipped the switch that gave them that second wind, that they were just going to blow past this team.
You talk about the atmosphere, a little over 6,000 fans.
6,300.
Wow. that exceeded the expectations because they were hoping for
5,000.
5,000. So they blew that out of the water. And now Adia Barnes, she's like, I'm getting greedy. I want 7,000. But I don't think I've seen an atmosphere like that at McHale Center for an Arizona women's basketball game. For somebody that was there from a firsthand perspective, what did you see out of the crowd?
It was incredible. First of all, the whole lower bowl was full. The student section was full. They came out in force, and they actually sat in the Zona Zoo this time. I think a lot of students came to the previous two games, but they didn't sit with in the student section, so people didn't know that they were there. But they were there. They were loud. The whole crowd was loud. And I have to admit that I had the shivers the entire game because it was such an incredible.
Not because you were cold.
No. Not because I was cold. But it was just such an incredible atmosphere. I can only imagine what it must have felt like on the court playing, knowing that 6,300 of your fans were cheering for you. In fact, I went up and I did some research today to see what Oregon usually gets for a game. And when Arizona played at Oregon this year, Oregon had 7,000 fans in the stadium.
And that's a top five team.
That's a top five team, and they average at least 7,000 a game. So the difference here is that they went into the Ducks' home and had 7,000 people cheering against them. How about having 6,300 people cheering for you?
Yeah.
What does that do for you? And they loved it. They just seemed to revel in this. This is the greatest thing ever for these girls.
PJ, you had an interesting point in your story on Thursday night after the game that, like you said, it can be a shell shock when you come out and you're playing in front of 6,000 fans, whether they're your fans or not. I mean, it's intimidating. And this team has sort of found a way to thrive off that and run with it. Even if they're your fans, playing in front of 6,000 people, I mean, whether or not you play sports, you can imagine what that's like. And these women are now doing it on a weekly basis, twice a week, over the last couple of weeks in the WNIT run, and they're playing well. I think it's interesting how putting all of the social media hype that Adia Barnes and you know, the Arizona Athletic Department has done, trying to heat up interest in this team.
Yeah.
More so than that, I think it's what they're doing on the court, because Adia Barnes, before the WNIT even started, said she wanted 5,000 people, and there were 3,000, I think, on hand for that first
round. Yeah. 33, 35.
So 3,300 for that first WNIT game, and that's when she was calling for 5,000. We just reached it now, but I think that's more of a testament to the product on the court. If it was Adia Barnes and all of that, and no doubt that all helps, the social media push absolutely helps, but the product on the court is what drives interest. And right now it's happening because Arizona's making a run. They're more and more, I mean, they're getting their name out there and people want to go see them. And I think it's definitely more of the product on the court than what you're seeing on social media, even though no doubt that helps.
Well, I think the product on the court just backs up what, you know, what they're doing off the court. And I think that, you know, not only are they winning, which people are getting behind, and all of a sudden the community is saying, wait, something's going on here. They had a Sweet 16 game. Now they're going to have a Elite Eight game. They haven't been there since 1996 when Adia took her team to the championships of the NIT. And
wow.
So it's a long time. People have been waiting a long, long time to get back to the postseason. And I think as it goes along, there's this momentum in the community that people are talking about it. People are saying, wait, they're doing something. And then they go to the game and they see how fast the game is, what a fun style of play they have. They see Ari McDonald. They see Kate Reese. They see Sam Thomas. They see all these great players doing these really fun things, having fun out there when they're playing. And when's the last time they saw a team have so much fun?
Well, and you talk about the fans and them seeing the team up close and in person. I think one thing that was really impressive to me is, you know, when they do the introductions for the starting lineups, They're throwing T-shirts, towels into the stands.
Do they have cannons? Do they have cannons? T-shirt cannons?
That'd
be so cool.
You see it rally, pep rallies in high school?
But they set, every they, starter, they have a towel or
they have
a ball.
Signed ball, and they throw those in the stands. But they also throw T-shirts, too. Like, they always have a couple extra T-shirts around, and they'll throw those out,
They
too.
Need a cannon. You see them in the NBA. You know what I'm saying? The T-shirt cannons. Oh, They McHale Center needs a T-shirt cannon.
But I think that's really cool that you're watching the starting lineup, and you could get an autograph ball from Ari McDonald. And then afterwards, you'll see Adia Barnes and the assistant coaches throw out T-shirts and towels. That right there, what it does, this is just my opinion, is it brings people back because people are like, wow, this is
a good time.
This is a fan-friendly environment. This is an exciting environment, and I might get a T-shirt out of this. Yeah. And also, after the games, the entire team goes around McHale Center courtside and gives everybody high fives. I've never seen that done at McHale Center. The only time I have seen it done outside of the women's team was senior day for the men's team last year with DeAndre Ayton and Dusan Ristich. Mm-hmm. That was when they went into the stands and high-fived everybody. But the fact that the women's team, they are so appreciative of the fans that come out there. It's not like they expect it. And I think Adia Barnes is going to get this program to a point where the expectations are going to be 7,000 fans, but they're still going to be grateful and appreciative for it because they have a community kind of forming up this alliance right behind them.
Right. And I know, PJ, you can probably add to this because you've covered Adia Barnes all year, but she hit the nail on the head on Thursday night after the game when she said, you know, we're the hottest thing on campus right now. You know,
they're the hottest thing in Tucson.
They are.
Period. I mean, they really are. And it's easy to get people to come out and watch you when you're quite literally the hottest thing going on in town. Mm-hmm. And you got to put it into perspective. It's not fair to compare women's basketball at Arizona to men's basketball because men's basketball is the pinnacle of all sports in Tucson. It always has been. It always will be.
It's a big cash cow.
Right. Right. That's an unfair comparison, but when you compare it to things like, say, softball, who has had attendance problems with virtually a brand new stadium, Kendra talked about it this week, about how they've always struggled to get students out there. Arizona women's basketball right now is the hottest show in Tucson, the hottest show at the U of A. Mm-hmm. They are what you want to watch, and that's a testament to Adia Barnes.
It is, and you know, what Justin was talking about, the fact that they throw the balls out and the T-shirts and the towels and they go around and they high five fans and hug some fans after the games. They've been doing this forever.
For a long time.
This is part of the culture that Adia Barnes has built here. She's out in the community. Those girls, they've won the Director's Cup for community service 2 consecutive years, and I would imagine they'd win it this year too. They have a relationship with their fans, and as more fans come in and they see this, it's just more for them to like. And right now, other fans in Tucson, other people in the community are getting a chance to see them because when you win, people come.
Exactly.
Can we talk about the product just on the court for a second? Because that was a huge game against Idaho, big time win. They held them off. What was that shot? It was a shot at the end of the third quarter. The tip in was great.
It was like a volleyball.
I loved it. The team loved it. They all, you know, they huddle around and they were loving it. And it, you know, it's those big momentum swings that they kind of need. Idaho was battling back, and then at the end of the third quarter, Arizona kind of put the foot down, and then came out in the fourth quarter and got hot again. So, because it was a bad third quarter. I mean, it was good defense on both ends, but the offense wasn't any good. I mean, no one was scoring. And call it defense, call it bad offense, whatever you want. It was ugly. And Arizona came out and turned things around the fourth quarter.
So the next steps for this team, they're going to host Wyoming this weekend, Sunday, for an afternoon tip-off. Right. If they were to beat Wyoming, it's big if.
Yeah.
What are the next steps? They got the Final Four. Is there a possibility that Arizona hosts the Final Four?
I think so. Now, you know, we've heard from before that I don't know if they usually like ever one team to go into the finals and play every game at home. However, the fact that Arizona's winning, fans are coming out, like no other school who has hosted games has had this many fans attend games who is still in the WNIT tournament.
Sure.
So the fact that they have all these things around them, plus the fact that IDEA has the support of Athletic Director Dave Hickey and the administration, they want these games at home. There's a possibility that they could host, I think, the whole thing if they keep winning.
There are
huge.
There are, because Mickey and I, Justin, were talking about this last night about how they don't like one team hosting the entire tournament. There are two teams on the other side of the bracket to where, hypothetically, if it worked out to where Arizona would meet one of them in the championship, there are two teams, Ohio and I believe it is James Madison, who have hosted so far all of their games into the Elite Eight. So there is a chance that if it was a concern that the WNIT did not want Arizona to host all of their games, that they could meet another team who has hosted all of their games going into the championship. So, but yeah, I mean, it's hard to put Arizona on the road right now just because of the attention that they're garnering. It's good for the WNIT more. I mean, it's more than just about Arizona right now. It's a WNIT. It's women's basketball. I mean, they're garnering attention, and it's a difficult thing to do in women's basketball as a whole, but they're doing it in the WNIT right now, and I think there's something to say about that.
I think it's just such a good story that I can't imagine the WNIT going away from Arizona. And I think that, you know, they have to bid for each home game, and I think that Arizona's going to have a strong bid in for each game.
First things first, they got to beat Wyoming.
They got to
beat Wyoming on
Wyoming
Sunday night
first.
At McHale Center.
Yeah.
PJ, what are the odds that they can pull it off? What are the keys?
Well, the keys I say to every game are...
Keys.
I think that if they go out and play the way their game, the way they know how to play, and they listen to their coach, they're going to win the game. And to me, that's happened every game. It sounds
listen
so
to Adia.
Simple. It sounds so simply, simple, but it's true. If they play and they listen to their coach every single game, they've won so far. And they're... I've noticed that the hunger that they have. And so it's the whole thing of, you know, they were picked to finish 10th in the Pac-12, and they got a little chip on their shoulder, and they grew, and they were better, and they believed in themselves all season. And now they're at a point where they're showing people, this is what we were talking about all season. We really believed in ourselves. And I think that the combination of who they are and what they do, plus this added hunger, that spells a chance to win Sunday and keep playing.
Mm-hmm. Arizona Wildcats taking on Wyoming, set for a 2 p.m. tip-off at McHale Center. Tickets are only $8. So, Adia's hoping for 7,000.
I think
she might get it.
I think she's getting it.
Saw earlier on Friday that there were like 600 left to reach 7,000. So it shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah,
they should cruise past 7,000.
I think 8,500. I think
8,500
between 8,000 and 8,500.
Is that
for this game?
Does that raise the curtains?
It could.
The lower bowl was pretty dang full on Thursday night, and that was 6,300. I mean, they're getting sneaky close to raising the curtains.
That's raising the curtains.
I mean, it's not going to be. It's not going to be much fuller than that lower bowl if the curtains raise, but I mean, hey.
Pushing it. I like it. Again, that's PJ Brown, Arizona women's basketball beat writer for the Arizona Daily Star. PJ, where can we find you on Twitter?
At PJ Brown 09.
Okay. And you can check out her impressive and exclusive coverage of the Arizona Wildcats on Tucson.com and the Wildcaster app, which is available on the App Store and Google Play. Well, that would do it for this episode of the Wildcast podcast. Like I said, don't forget to download the app. It's free. You don't need a subscription to the Arizona Daily Star. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. For PJ, for Dom, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Wildcaster fans. Come check out The Point Being, the Arizona Daily Star's opinion page podcast. We talk about current events, what's going on in the world, the letters page, and more. So check us out at thepointbeingpodcast.com.